Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, folks. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us. Today, we're going to talk about something really pretty interesting. We're going to talk about the subject of therapy and what it's like to go to therapy. You know, you hear people referring to, oh, well, I went to my therapist today. You know, you hear it on TV a lot. A lot of people talk about seeing their therapist. But there are a lot of people who don't know anything about what it's like. Why should you go to a therapist? Who can benefit from therapy? And what's it like when you go see a therapist? There's kind of a common stigma about mental health therapy that people are just paying to have a friend. And while friends are emotionally invested, they're likely biased and not able to give a pretty objective opinion. Therapy is much more than a simple rent a friend. There's a science behind it, and there's research behind it. And that's an observation from our guest today, Daniel Anselmi, who is a California licensed marriage and family therapist at Guiding Empathy, Inc. We're gonna explore this whole subject of therapy with Dan. As I pointed out, he's a California licensed marriage and family therapist, so he can only deal with folks from California. But if you doesn't matter where you are, at least you can get some pointers on whether therapy would be good for you, whether you live in Ohio or, you know, Florida or wherever you might live. You could get some good information and insight. So let me bring him on now. Dan is based in one of the great areas in California, in Huntington Beach, California. And Dan, let me push the button here so you can talk to us. It's morning where you're still morning where you are. Nice to have you here. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Doug. It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, listen, I appreciate your taking the time to let us talk to you and give us some pointers on this whole subject. I know that you provide mental health therapy services for a variety of individuals and age groups. Often I understand people come to you with relationship issues, communication issues. They have difficulty controlling their emotions. They can be confused about who they are and who they'd like to be. That's a wide range of subjects that bring people to you. And for those in California who are interested, you provide both in-person and telehealth services, and you work with a broad group of individuals with diverse backgrounds and situations. So let's talk about this whole subject of therapy. What do you think it is the first thing that makes people realize therapy would be good for me? What brings them to your door, and where are they at that point? How would you answer that?
That is a good question, and how I would answer that would be oftentimes people come to therapy because they are running into a recurring issue in their life, or that they have people in their life saying, you know, you should probably talk to somebody, and getting that repeated message that something's not right, and whatever they have been trying to do has not been working. So oftentimes people come out of either desperation as a last-ditch effort to try to solve things. Sometimes people are more proactive in saying, things are not so right, but in general I'm doing okay. So I get lots of different people who more often than not, you know, come into, you know, they're really having a hard time. And what I can do is provide a safe and supportive environment for them to just at times vent, but also talk about how they would like things to be changed. And that's what we work through together.
So you are a licensed marriage and family therapist. There are people, obviously, who are having problems with their job and their work situation. That would not be the ideal person to come to you, or would that be wrong? I mean, I'm assuming you work with people who are having relationship issues, really, is what it comes down to, in a marriage or family situation. If it's somebody who's, you know, they can't get along in their job, they're not getting promotions or things like that, that's a whole different ballgame, wouldn't it be?
You would think so, but my particular license, the LMFT, does provide that general range of being able to address those types of issues, because oftentimes, let's say in that specific example of employment, oftentimes it has to do with the ability or inability to get along with others, or to follow directions, or to collaborate with other people. And those are the things that I also, you know, can address with people too. Like you've already kind of surmised, I can work with a wide range of different issues as well as populations.
All right, that's good. That's good to know. And I gather from what you said, people come to see you and they say something is just not right. It becomes your job to figure out what's going wrong. You've got to do digging to help them out, I guess. I guess that's a good way to put it, don't you?
Yes. Yes, that is a good way of you know, kind of summarizing what goes on. There has to be a little bit of investigation. You know, what are some, you know, for instance, I would ask clients, you know, what are some examples of, you know, where things didn't go right for you? And in their explanation of it, sometimes we can, you know, I can key in on certain, you know, phrases or situations, or, you know, when they give different examples, develop a theme. So they're, you know, and kind of summarize for them, oh, this seems to, you know, be an issue, you know, recurring pattern for you. Is that something that you would like to work on? So like in the first couple sessions, it's kind of identifying where the problem areas are. And then there's another aspect of therapy too, is trying to determine if a person is actually ready to work on those things. You know, friends, for example, is it enough for them just to have somebody to vent to, but I'm not really invested in making a change in that area?
Right.
And so that could be something to evaluate in therapy too. It's called the theory of the stages of change. And to sum it up in one sentence, not everybody is ready to make a change today. And that's part of what we can look and investigate to find out where they are in those stages of change and to work with them. For example, here is a very a recurring stage of change. It's ambivalence, that idea of like sitting on the fence. I can see both sides. I can see what you're saying, but there doesn't seem to be a indication of investment or commitment towards change just yet. So if somebody in their life is saying, you know, just frustrated, well, why don't you just do this? Well, they want you to be in action stage, but really what you're communicating through your words and behavior is, I'm still on the fence. I don't know yet. And that's where I can work with clients is, you know, working through that ambivalent stage, and that's very helpful for folks.
Let's talk about, obviously, you're a licensed marriage and family therapist. Let's talk about that category. When people who are married are having problems, I'm just going to guess, but I guess the one who initiates going to see a therapist like you would be the female. Would I be right?
More often than not, yes, that is correct. But there have been situations where it's been the reverse. You're right.
Well, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it just seems to me, from what I've heard and, you know, people I've talked to, it seems like it's the wife that normally is the driving force, in an event to try and save the marriage. Isn't that what it comes down to?
Correct. And, you know, at the risk of making, you know, sweeping generalizations, women do seem to have that, you know, maybe since birth of valuing, you know, relationships. And if there's any, you know, thing going awry, let's try to, you know, smooth things over. Let's try to address things so that the relationship is, you know, working better. So it almost seems like women have like the upper edge of that versus men. it's not as valued as much. For men, again, this is sweeping generalization.
Sure, absolutely.
Men do have that drive of status and achievement, and those are the driving forces.
So let's talk a little bit about how therapy with someone like you can help repair, or I guess repair really is the proper word to use, a marriage that has run awry. There are problems, so much so that at least one of the parties has decided to seek out help. What do you do? How does it begin? I'm sure there are a lot of people wondering, what happens when I go see a therapist like that? So tell me, how do you answer that?
I would answer that as, the first session, hopefully, both parts of the couple would come, or, in general, they're, again, it's not, there are all sorts of different types of relationships. And so I don't want to totally generalize. There's only two people in the relationship. So all parties involved would be invited to come and to share their concerns and their examples of where things, where they ran into difficulty, and then the opportunity for them to talk about how they would like it to improve. It's very interesting getting multiple perspectives of what the problem is, and that can be very informative in the first session. And especially for maybe one part of the couple to really hear for the first time, I never know he thought about that this way, or vice versa. I never know that was important to her. So it's an opportunity for a third party to present that safe and supportive environment for them to open up and share what's maybe for the first time, what's really bothering them, and how they would like things to change.
It's interesting. You would think that from what you're saying, you would think the couple, whoever is not being honest, would have divulged some of those thoughts before they get into an office with someone like you. But apparently not, because a lot of the things they're hearing now, they're hearing for the first time. Obviously, they've really got to be open and willing to be honest to come into someone and to get results from therapy, don't they? That's very important.
They do. Yes, honesty is important, but it's, as you know, in talking with folks, it can be very nuanced. Sometimes different levels of honesty becomes uncomfortable, even for the person to vocalize it or for the other person to hear it. So in that situation where you made an assumption that you would have thought, reasonable assumption, they would have already tried. Well,
right.
That's what I see too. These couples have already tried to talk about these things. And that is the, and I'm glad we're able to, talk about this part of it. Oftentimes I educate clients that we don't necessarily react to what someone says. We react to our interpretation of what they say. And sometimes that could be off the mark. Our interpretation or misinterpretation of it. And so that's kind of the nuance, getting into the nitty-gritty of communication and being able to communicate better is, okay, can we have the humbleness to say that this is what I think I heard? Is that what you meant? And oftentimes couples and people in different types of, familial relationships or sibling relationships, they don't know to kind of ask that question. They just kind of assume this is what they meant, or this is what I understood them to mean, and it must be true. And then they get blindsided that, it was completely different.
Wow. So you become kind of the referee between the parties involved. Obviously, it works best if both parties, if it's a marriage, a man and a woman, it's best if both are there and they're willing to come and to talk to you. No names. Don't mention any names. Give me some examples of the kind of situations that you encounter between people where you have to try and work things out for them? Because I'm sure there are a gazillion different kinds of situations you run into.
Sure, sure. There could be situations in relationships where one person is more of an introvert and another person is an extrovert. And sometimes if they don't know enough about that, what drives the other person, what motivates them, how they've recharged their batteries, there can be a mismatch there and a misinterpretation that, oh, you don't care about me. Well, no, it's not necessarily that, but I need to recharge in a different way than you do. But that doesn't mean that I love you any less. So that could be one of them, a misunderstanding between introverts and extroverts. Another example could be a very typical one is either one of them could have a different level of sex drive. And so one would be constantly, trying to initiate or encourage sex from their partner, and the other is like, back off. It's not as needed for me. And so those could be, challenging situations for couples to navigate, that can we find a compromise knowing and recognizing the differences that we do have. So that could be another example.
I was just going to say, how do you help out in that kind of situation? What's the answer?
Well, the answer is keeping the lines of communication open and knowing what our partner's preferences are, knowing what their sensitivities could be, taking that into account when we communicate, either verbally or non-verbally. Because let's say if somebody, the person who is trying to initiate something but also likes a hug on occasion, well, is the hug going to be interpreted as, oh, no, this is going to lead to something that I don't want?
Right.
But can a hug just be a hug? And so sometimes I, help clients, couples navigate those types of situations. And the answer would be keep the lines of communication open. Sometimes that means asking, permission. I feel like giving you a hug, or I feel like receiving a hug right now. Would that be okay?
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't even think that, oh, that sounds weird. That sounds awkward. Well, it's also showing respect to the other person that they have different needs and preferences than I do. And sometimes we can get confused and kind of project that what we need and what we want, the other person wants the exact same thing. Well, not necessarily.
I'm sure there are many situations like that's funny. On television last night, I saw a situation involving therapy where one of the parties had an affair, and the other one just found out about it, and it created a huge uproar in the relationship. Another thing, you are a family therapist, which I gather that involves children as well. Do you get involved with kids? When you say family, it's more than just the man and woman, right?
Correct. I've had, a lot of training working with kids, but it's interesting in my years being licensed as a therapist, I haven't utilized a lot of that. I still do get occasional, kids into my office. In those types of situations, either both parents or one parent would accompany the child and talk about, giving them the adult perspective of what they see and their concerns. And then also, hearing from the child or through different activities that would be more age appropriate for the child, because, it's not just talking. Trying to figure out, exactly where the difficulty, they're encountering, and then talking about a solution to solve that issue. For example, small kids could, have siblings. Well, there's, sibling rivalry. Well, most recent example was, I was able to present an environment where the child was able to verbalize, I created a game with my brother but he doesn't know about it. And the game is, I make the rules, and I have to win. And I was like, oh, so you make the rules. Do you think maybe the rules can change? And sometimes a strategy could be just asking a question and being silent. And I think that's where an experienced therapist can offer, is not being uncomfortable in the silence, but allowing the silence as an opportunity for the client to do some more inner work and just consider, oh, if I am capable of making rules, can I make a different rule? Or can I add to the rule? Can I edit the rule? And so and I was able to help, you know, a child in their extreme competition with their brother.
That would be
an example.
And, you know, I know you work with all different kinds of situations. You work with couples. Some are not married. Some are dating, engaged, otherwise cohabitants. I also have read that you have different methods of helping people going through therapy. At one point, I read you even have clients who like to talk to you while you play chess with them. And that's very beneficial. Is that true? I mean, is that often, very often?
It doesn't happen very often, but I have various, you know, activities in the room, in my office, mm-hmm. that are available to clients. And when I get the sense that, you know, either the talking has become, you know, stale, or they're just not opening up, you know, to a sufficient degree where it's going to be beneficial, then, you know, I offer suggestions of, well, there's different activities we can do while we, you know, talk about things. So it's not just, you know, a diversionary tactic. It is, some people feel more comfortable, you know, doing something, doing an activity together. And sometimes that can mean, you know, drawing together. I mean, I think in some of the stores, they have like what they call adult coloring books. Those can be very calming and meditative. And sometimes when people are doing an activity like that, it gets them to start relaxing more and opening up about the things that are concerning them, or dreams that they may have for the future, or worries. Yeah, oftentimes I get asked, you know, what do I specialize in, or what can I, how can I be of help? Sometimes I give like a general kind of overview of, you know, the different areas that I can help with. And some of that's also grief and loss. You know, sometimes playing a board game together, they can talk about the person that they lost. And, you know, there's a caveat. Not always referring to a loved one, because they could have had a very complicated relationship with the person that they lost. And so that's, you know, a sensitive area too for some folks. But yeah, I make sure that there are different activities in the room, either board games or drawing materials, sometimes chess, sometimes checkers, you know, kind of mix it up.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I want to point out, you work with individuals. I mean, it could be someone who has a medical condition that affects their mental health, and they're coming to you for help. There are just so many situations, you know, that you confront. I know this is kind of a second career for you, because you began, as I understand it, a medical and radiology transcriptionist, and got the desire to work in mental health from doing that. What's it like doing, from your perspective, sitting and listening to people tell you about, you know, their problems and their situations, and they're, you know, they're not thrilling to listen to. These are real problems. How is it for you when the day is over? You know, what's it like?
That is a very good question. And a succinct answer would be mixed emotions. There, because my clients have mixed emotions too. And what I mean by that is, we can be feeling multiple things at the same time. So in other words, I can feel very rewarded, fulfilled, but also in a certain sense kind of saddened because people are still suffering. So I can feel saddened for their situations, but I can also feel a sense of hope that hey, I can provide assistance in that area. And in some cases, you know, relief of that suffering. It's not necessarily taking away the pain, emotional pain or physical pain, but it's a way to consider that I can relate to that pain in a different way. I can relate to that thought in a different way. One of the strategies, and I, you know, recall my very first supervisor talking about this, he came up with empathy first, problem solving second. And I didn't come up with it, but it is a, I think it's a very useful framework from which to help all my clients. And, you know, you mentioned about, you know, maybe how this is my second career. And one of the primary motivating factors for me to get into this field is because I had this sense of, for various reasons, in various situations, I wasn't seen or heard, or I didn't think my opinions mattered. And part of that was me in my thinking process, but also part of that was the environment and the people that I was around. And I thought that if I can provide an environment where clients are first seen and heard and appreciated, then that's going to start the healing process. And then we can go towards the more traditionally noticed, oh, this is okay, now we're going to solve the problem. Well, it's a different way of looking at the problem. Maybe the problem in the first place was people were not getting the message that they were seen and heard and understood. So I get clients of, you know, minority backgrounds, people who have been bullied, people who have been discriminated against, people who are worried about the political direction because they're thinking that policies are going to change, which affects my livelihood.
Yeah.
So I get clients that are talking to me about, you know, is it right for me to code switch just so that I can get ahead, just so that I can survive and pay my bills? But I feel terrible inside when I'm doing that. I get those types of deeper conversations. I get conversations where clients are like, this is how I was brought up to believe, but I don't know if I believe that anymore. But I feel bad if I say no to that. Those are the deeper conversations that people come to me with.
Well, I tell you, it must be a really interesting profession to have to lead. No question about it. You're highly qualified to do it. And I want to point out you have a great website. I know you're licensed in California, and you work with folks on the telephone as well as in person, but your website is guidingempathy.com, guidingempathy.com. If you go there, you'll learn about what Dan does and how you can get in direct contact with him. Again, his name is Dan Anselmi. He's based in Huntington Beach, California, and if you think you need help, and you are a Californian, obviously, he would be certainly one to consider calling. Dan, thank you for giving us some insight into what it's like to be a therapist, as you are. I found it very interesting indeed and learned a lot. So thanks for taking the time to be with us today, okay? We appreciate it.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate the opportunity.
You're very, very welcome. That'll do it, everybody. I don't care where you are. If you feel you need help, maybe you need to see a therapist in your area. Perhaps they could be a big help to you. Let's hope so.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
That we do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time, everybody. Till then, take care. Bye for now.